This year sees the 25th anniversary, God help us all, of We're Going on a Bear Hunt. Everyone loves that book and that story. It's the multi-million selling book by author, broadcaster and former children's laureate, Mr. Michael Rosen. And he's been entertaining and inspiring children for over three decades. And in his new book, Good Ideas, How to Be Your Child and Your Own Best Teacher, the dad of five shows you how to do the very same. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Mike. It's lovely to have you with us this morning.
Hi, Ryan. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. But I do have one key question before we get down to business, which is how do we drag children away from a screen and tell them that there are more interesting things in the world than TV, iPad, iPod, phone, etc., etc.?
Well, maybe we don't make it a battle. Maybe we sit with them and enter conversations, have conversations with them about what's going on. Because one of the things, I mean, I don't find telly and iPads and all the rest of it evil in themselves.
Yeah.
What it is the fact that we sit there quietly, not engaging with it.
Yeah.
So my attitude always is, rather than leaving kids stuck on their own with it, what we do is we sit with them and say, what are you doing? And what's this about? And then, if necessary, blurt out things ourselves, provocative things like my parents did years ago when we used to listen to the radio. This way you get children thinking and engaging in something and not just absorbing it.
And that's really the key to your book, isn't it? It's about hanging out with the kids and being not their best friend, but certainly friends and friendly.
And taking the cue from them. When children ask questions, you know, we get quite used to it as adults to say, hey, look, don't bother me now, or I don't know, or just snapping out an answer in the hope they won't ask another one. I think what we do is do exactly the opposite. What we do is take every question as a great starting point. Now, you may not be able to answer or do anything about it straight away, but you could say, hey, that's an interesting question. Let's see if we can find out. Why is the sky blue? I don't know why the sky's blue. Maybe there's something on one of your machines you've got there, your tablet or your phone or something. Maybe we'll look that up. Can't do now because I'm washing up, but let's have a look later. So take the questions they ask seriously and run with it.
Okay, and kind of enjoy the detective work of it.
Well, indeed, that's it. Because, you know, it's through the detective work that we... if you like, we discover how to learn. I mean, you know, one of my favourite stories is the very first Sherlock Holmes story. Mm. I remember reading it as a 12-year-old and I thought, my word, the world out there, whether it's a bus ticket or the way a shoe has been worn or something, that is actually how things get made and how things change. Now, in some way or another, that's what we need to excite our children in.
So when a child, for a lot of children growing up, homework was always the sort of the millstone of a given day. How do you suggest we get stuck in with them to either help them without doing it for them, and maybe even adding, dare I say it, an element of enjoyment to the procedure?
Well, quite often, if it's not just a straight learning thing, we'll come back to that in a minute.
Sure.
But if it's when your kid comes to you and says, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do.
Now,
quite often, quite seriously, we look at this stuff and we don't know what to do either. You know, we look at it. I mean, last night, my daughter came to me with, I think, what's called a cyclic quadrilateral.
Oh.
And there it was, and she needed to know the angles on it.
Yeah.
And our attitude straight away was, the very first thing is you say, well, look, you talk us through it. Because the teacher will have told them something, or they will have a worksheet, or they have something. Just talking through it, more often than not, actually unlocks the problem, because what they're doing is running through the video in their head of what happened in the lesson that day or the day before. If it doesn't, then you say, well, okay, let's look at this thing. Now, nearly always, it's a bit like, you know, furniture self-assembly. It's a thing in stages, and somewhere or another, your kid, your child kind of jumped a bit and then can't find the way back. So what you have to do is go back to the point where it gets sticky, and then, if necessary, use a website. There are fantastic American websites and, dare I say, BBC websites, which actually offer wonderful things. So all you have to do is put into the search engine the problem, cyclic quadrilaterals, and up come these things that are designed specially for people between the ages of 9 and, well, I don't know, in my case, 68, and to show us how to do these things. And then, but you may find, which is exactly what happened last night, our daughter, she cracked it before we even got there, because she said, oh, look, those two angles there, those two sides, so blah, 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 it's a nice isosceles triangle, and bonk, she had it. And
God.
I went, well, there you go. And she went, like, she was quite angry, actually. She went, oh, well, thank you very much for helping. And I said, no, you didn't need us to help. You did it yourself.
So just thinking aloud, talking it through with somebody makes you feel less alone, less of a battle, and might lead to, obviously, very conducive to problem solving.
Well, yes. And in actual fact, you find that quite often it's retracing the steps that unlocks it. That's one of the things. So rather than diving in and pretending to know, in my case, I wouldn't do that on maths, but diving in and pretending to know, you get them to talk it through, and somehow or other voicing it quite often does the trick.
Now, you say that homework and DIY are much the same, so that'll appeal to a lot of fellas listening this morning, mostly. So why is that?
Well, indeed. Well, you just think about it. You know, a lot of DIY stuff is that, you know, I know you get these instructions, whatever it might be, you know, assembling something or other or something you're supposed to do. Mm. And our tendency quite often is to say, oh, I don't need instructions. I know exactly what to do. Yeah. My dad told me how to do that. And you jump in at what is basically stage 9. And then by the time you get to stage 11, the whole thing's not really quite working out right. And whatever it is, the sofa that you were assembling or the chair or something has got something rickety because you didn't do stages 1 to 10. So what I'm saying is that quite often homework is very similar, that quite often the kinds of homeworks that our children come to us where they're stuck, as opposed to the learning kind, the ones where they're stuck is because they didn't do the stages. So instead of being like the classic dad who thinks that he can assemble the sofa without reading the instructions first, that you do that boring thing. What's step 1? Lay everything out. What's step 2? Put them into order. What's step 3? And so on. Very, very simple things first, because that gives you the foundation.
One of the things that I love about your book and about your outlook in general is making the mundane memorable and having fun. So, for example, you talk about a long car journey. For some people, that's watching a DVD or, you know, or going for a sleep. But really, it can be rather a chore, more an adventure.
Well, you know, we quite often ignore the mundane because we're told that knowledge is about very, very clever stuff. You know, like we watch TV programs where the brain of this place and so on answers some incredible esoteric question about the periodic table or something like that. And in actual fact, the stuff that we live with contains an enormous amount of the, if you like, of the knowledge that we need, whether we're in the loo, whether we're on a car journey, whether we're in the kitchen. These are like laboratories. You know, we live with the scientific revolution that happened, and everything around us, whether it's glass or metal or plastic. And it same goes for car journeys. You know, when you're on a car journey, the world is presenting itself to you. Now, it can be at the level of numbers and letters on registration plates, or it can be at the level of the things that you're seeing out the window. All we have to do is, in a sense, be curious about it with our kids and say, well, I wonder what that is. And in fact, the moment you show yourself to be curious, your children will ask you questions and say, well, what's that? More often than not, we don't know. And we'll say, well, you know, have you got your tablet there? Are you hooked up? No. All right. Well, let's make a note of that. And we'll look at that later tonight. Or if you're abroad and there are signs and people say, well, what does that mean? And why is that keep saying that the same? And suddenly, you know, your kid will say, hey, I know the French word for stop. And you say, yeah, what is it? It's stop. Ah, interesting. Yeah. All right. They use the same word, and so on.
Yes. And so on. And then the other thing is, of course, is to create something out of nothing in terms of the great outdoors or the street you're walking on or, you know, the home you're living in, just to make kind of create games and things to do to kind of exercise for the brain with your kids. So it's not just, you know, zombified existence, really.
Well, indeed, you know, when you walk down a street, you know, I've been to Dublin, you know, I've seen them. You've got loads of different, if you like, coal holes and drain covers and covers for facilities of one sort or another. Now, you know, most of us for 12 hours a day, we just walk over those things. We never even look at them. One of the nice ways to engage your children, if you like, when they're in the street, is say, hey, what's that down there? You know, and, you know, like in London, for example, you see these covers that say CATV on them. Now, I don't know what it stands for, but I kid my kids. I say, you know what that is? That's cat TV in there, you know. There's cats down there and they're watching telly. And they go, no, it isn't, Dad, because look, it's CATV. If the cats were in cat TV. And I say, no, it's because they can't spell.
Yeah.
No, you see, the cats, they can't spell, you see. Yeah. But no, down there, yeah, really, the cats are watching telly. Well, that sort of it, and you muck about like that, it invites the curiosity in it.
Yeah, and that's it. And you're having fun getting there, because I often say to kids, you know, they said, I love history. I say to them, do you like history in school? And they say, no, it's awful. I said, no, it's not awful. You just have a bad teacher. You know, because you should never be bored with history. You know, the past is fascinating.
Well, indeed. I mean, quite often it is difficult. If a child, for whatever reason, doesn't like the teacher, quite often the whole subject goes out the window.
Yeah.
And one of our problems as parents is to try and engage them in a subject that the kids have got turned off. And maybe the way is not to confront it head on, but you tuck away in the back of your mind, OK, let's say it's history. The kid's fed up with history. So, you know, you go somewhere. You go to an old castle, you go to an old place and see whether that engages them. Or you go to, you know, I went to that wonderful exhibition in Dublin. It's kind of History of Ireland exhibition, isn't there, in Dublin, with the reconstructions of history. And I went with my kids. And we were absolutely gripped by it. In fact, one room was so scary, they kind of, you know, put the head round the door and rushed out, and then put the head round the door again and rushed out. You know, and you think, well, that's an engagement with history.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the other hand, we went to Alnwick Castle in Northumberland in England last year, and they were gripped by different things, you know, quite strange things, but like for the fact that the ceiling's so far up, they give you a special kind of glass, sort of mirror, magnifying mirror to look at the ceiling with. So suddenly you're looking at, you know, and you think, well, who's going to look at a ceiling? Why would you interest a 10-year-old in a ceiling? But because there was this fun thing, there was an interesting thing.
Exactly. And I remember a great teacher, and I know you talk about this in your book as well. I had a great teacher once who said, when you're walking along any street, look up and look at the tops, and you see all the variety of architecture. It's so beautiful in Dublin and other cities in Ireland, but also in London and other cities, again, because it's the difference. If you look up in New York, yeah, you see big, tall buildings, and they're fascinating. But actually, if you look up beyond the plastic signs for burger bars and so on, there's a whole world up there too.
Exactly. There's levels in a street. So just as I'm saying, you look down and you see these drain covers, and then at the next layer, you know, you see these strange things, what used to be called street furniture. It might be horse troughs where the old horses used to get a drink, and there's a strange sign on it. Then you go up another layer and you've got shop signs and plaques on the wall, and then you go up even higher. You know, you've got all those things about, like, what sort of strange houses, flats there are over shops. I was brought up in a flat over a shop. And then when you raise your eyes higher, you see these strange things that have been made sometimes out of terracotta and different kinds of chimneys and all that, and wire roofs made of different stuff, sometimes slate, sometimes tile, you know. And you have to find ways to engage with this stuff. And where does slate come from anyway? Do they make slate? Well, they're making one now, but they used to dig it up. There's a place in Ireland, isn't there, where they dig it up. There's a place in England, in Cornwall and Wales, where they dig it up.
Yeah.
You know, there's all this stuff. And so if there's a question that comes from the kid, well, what's slate? Instead of diving straight in, you go, well, I'm not quite sure. Let's go and look it up.
Exactly. It's about the pursuit of, trivia and not such trivial matters, indeed. A couple of comments in from listeners. This may sound very simplistic, says the text, but just don't buy phones, handheld gamers or tablets for children. Mine are 11 and 9, and I've never given in to buying them, despite the peer pressure I've received from my friends who seem to think I'm eccentric and very mean for not buying my children this stuff. When they were younger, I used to hear that they were the only ones in their class without it, but they haven't mentioned them. Car journeys are made up of simple games like counting the reg plates from a certain county or cars of a certain colour, whatever. Another says, I feel that recently iPads and phones and other devices have completely wrecked any conversation or interest in younger people. Although they are great for general use, I sometimes find myself wishing they were never invented. And that's just a little flavour, Michael, of people's thoughts on that.
Yes, I mean, you can take a view that you've got to kind of keep all these machines at bay and to live like a 19th century person, and I respect people who do that. No, I do. I respect people who are doing it. It's just very, very difficult. Some people might find it too difficult, that's all I'm saying.
Yes.
And also, you know, let's not forget, these digital media offer us windows on the world. The question is whether you let it so that it so engulfs you that you are then separated off from the human beings around you, and you're just, in a sense, down the digital tunnel. That's why I'm saying is that another way, what I try to do, is to engage with it and say, well, you know, what are you looking at? And this is what I'm looking at. Look what I just found out today by doing searching on this author I'm interested in called Emil Zola, and look what I found out about him. And so the idea that if you look through this window of the digital media, you find out things that interest you and that you can talk about them.
Well, your book is a manual for the, I suppose you could say.
And it's mad as well, actually. No, it's a mad manual, yes.
It's a manual for the modern parent. It's chock-a-block with ideas and it's enlightening. I think people really get a kick out of it. A good thing to have in the house as a kind of reference point, if nothing else. And you have beautiful Quinton Blake illustrations there as well, Michael. And thanks again on behalf of all our listeners for the Bear Hunt down through the years, and I hope that served you well in life.
It has indeed, good old Bear Hunt.
Yeah, good. And thanks for your time this morning. Lovely to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me, Ryan. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye. Michael Rose, sorry, Left him out there for a second. Michael Rosen is the author of Good Ideas, How to Be Your Child's and Your Own Best Teacher. It's a lovely, lovely read. You get the flavour from what he was talking about. It's a universal story. It's not just for English people. I think you'll like it.